At 12 and a little past the middle of Kuf Gimel of the days, the line begins Omer. In the middle of the Agadta about what happened before and during the time when Rebbe passed away. We mentioned yesterday that among Rebbe's instructions had been that the next Rosh Shiva is going to be a Talmud of Hanina Bar Chama. And the whole story over there was he turned it down and Rav Office became Rosh Shiva instead, and he only became Rosh Shiva years later. Now, the Gemara asked, Vaha Havar Abchiyah. Why did Rebbe give the job to Rav Hanina Bar Chama? Why didn't he give it to Rav Chiya, who was his greatest Talmud? The answer is not Nafshe. Rav Chiya had passed away by then. What do you mean he passed away? Rav Chiya, Anira Isi Kivre Sho Rebbe. Rav Chiya says, I saw Rebbe's kever, which actually Rashi says not his kever per se. My Ramshe points out that later on the Gemara says Rebbe's kever was prepared while he was still alive, but he saw his aura and he saw his coffin actually being taken to burial. And so that means he had to have seen that he passed away. V'hiratzi olav d'mayis, and I shed tears on it. So Rav Chiya was still alive when Rebbe passed away. The answer is April. Flip it around. It's the other way around. Rebbe is saying that when I saw Rav Chiya's coffin or his grave or whatever, that I cried about it. Okay. What about, though, there's another braisa where Rav Chiya says on the day that Rebbe passed away, Kedusha ceased.
So he's present.
Which means that he was still alive. And again, the answer is Eitoch. Now, what do we mean by Kedusha ceased? There's two possibilities of what it means. First of all, Tosfos points out he's called Rabbeinu HaKadosh, so that means that he had a certain level of Kedusha. So first of all, Tosfos points out, I mean, the Mishnah at the end of Sota says that when Rebbe passed away, then Anova and Yerechet went away, that he was the greatest Anova and he was the greatest Yerechet, but not Kedusha.
Then more than Aaron.
No, from up until that point, he was the greatest in those days. Later on, the Gemara points out, Rav Nachman, Rabbi Yitzchak says the Tana, who was teaching this Mishnah in his Beis Medrash, that don't say that Anova is gone because I'm around. There's a whole sikha where the Rebbe explains not Anova, Yerechet, because Rav Nachman accomplished a lot in Yerechet also. Anyway, the point is, it doesn't say anything about over there but Kedusha ceasing. So Tosfos answers, first of all, that Anova and Yira includes Kedusha. And before Hashem explained, because there's the famous thing also actually at the end of Sota, also in Avodah Zarah, the whole series of levels over there, Zehirus Mevidyon Zrizus, and Zrizus Brigus Nikiyus, and the Silas Yisharim is actually based on that Braita. And it mentions over there, so you have Anova and Yira Tzchet are prerequisite to Kedusha. So if Anova and Yira Tzchet went away, then automatically it means Kedusha also. That's one explanation. Then Tosfos says another interesting thing. Batul Kedusha means that it doesn't mean a permanent thing that Kedusha went away. It means on the day that Rebbe passed away, Kedusha was suspended. What Kedusha? The Kedusha of Koyach. What does that mean? Well, what does that mean? So Rashi, so Tosfos quotes one of the Balei HaTosfos, sort of Chaim Kohen, that if I had been there when Rabbeinu Tam passed away, apparently he was from a later generation than Rabbeinu Tam, but if I had been there, I would have been Matame for him. I am a Kohen, but I would have been Matame for him. So what does that mean? There's two different explanations that the Rishonim and Achronim give what this means. One is that we're talking specifically about a Nasi, that even though a Kohen has an Isser to be Matam of a Mess, for a Nasi we make an exception. Since everybody is Chayiv in the covet of a Nasi, we treat him in that sense as a Mess Mitzvah. So everybody, we consider him in effect, the fact that everybody has to come, we consider it in effect as though nobody is there. So therefore, everybody has a chiyuv to be there, including Kohen.
Even if he's in Israel?
Yes, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, a Kohen's usual heter to become Tamei Mes is only for close relatives. But there's also a heter for a Mes Mitzvah. So one way of looking at it is Nasi, since the whole Jewish people are chayiv to honor him, then he's considered like a Mes Mitzvah in that sense. So in that case, what Rav Chaim Kohen is saying about Rav Etam, Rav Etam was not a Nasi, per se, they didn't have Nasius in those times, but because he was the greatest person of his time, at least in that part of the world, then he felt he would be considered a Nasi for that purpose.
Where did he live in the
world? Rav Etam lived in France, northern France, a city called Ramaru. Anyway, whatever. That's one possibility. The other possibility, Mefarshim say, is that it's a more general thing, that the famous idea that tzaddikim are not metame mes. And there's a lot of reasons given for that, among them that a tzaddik doesn't die through the malach hamavis, he dies through mitzvah nishika, that his guf itself is on a higher level.
Yeah,
yeah. So the argument is, according to that way of looking at it, it's not just Rebbe or Rebbe Natam or whatever, or Nasi. It would be any great tzaddik like that he's not Matame. And in fact, they bring proofs to Tosfos in the Tosfos and Rav Metzia that brings a proof to this idea from a Gemara that mentions over there that Eliyahu and Navi was standing in a Beis HaKvaros, and Eliyahu is a Kohen. According to one opinion, Eliyahu is a Kohen, Pinchas Eliyahu. A lot of possibilities, and then within that itself, it bifurcates into, are we talking about then that Kohenim would be able to be Matame Mess when it comes to the funeral of Tzaddik, but not necessarily later on when it comes to visiting his caver, or would it include even visiting his caver later? So there are, you can find opinions on all the different sides. In general, the poskim, though, tend to take a dim view of relying on this mela as far as the funeral, maybe is one thing, but when to go and visit the oil is another thing. We find, for example, when the oil on the Alter Rebbe caver was being built, his brother, the Maharil, gave a tshuva from him where he describes how to build it in a way that Kohenim will be able to daven there without becoming Tomei Mess. That's the idea also by the oil of the Friedrich Rebbe and our Rebbe, is why it doesn't have a roof over it, is that way anybody who comes in there is not the time of oil. And that's, they have the fences along the way there to prevent Kohenim from becoming Tomei Mess. Anyway, so those are the different possibilities of what it means Batla Kedusha. But either way, the point is that the Gemara's Hava Amina was that Rav Chiya can only be saying that about Rebbe, especially according to the way of looking at it. If we say Batla Kedusha means that we make an exception for a Nasi, Rebbe was a Nasi, Rav Chiya wasn't. But we're answering Eibuch, no, because the meaning of it could be Batla Kedusha in the sense that more generally that it applies to a tzaddik, to a great tzaddik, which would include Rav Chiya, not just Rebbe. Yeah. Okay. Third one, Vahatanya. What about we learn in a Braisa? Kshachola Rebbe. When Rebbe became sick before he passed away, Nifnas Rav Chiya Etzloi. Rav Chiya came to visit him. And he found him crying. Amalei Rebbe, Mifnei Ma'ata Boicha. What are you crying for? Vahatanya. We learn in a Braisa. Mes Metecha Schoik Simin Yafalai. If a person dies in a happy frame of mind, then it's a good sign for him. Metecha B'chi Simin Ralai. But if he dies crying, it's a bad sign for him. Why? The Pashtus, Shittim Kubetis, I think it is, says that the Pashtus, the idea is if he dies smiling, happy, it means that he sees the good that's awaiting him in Gan Eden. If he dies crying, it means he's seeing the Malach HaMavet, it means he's seeing the Ganem, whatever. And it continues. There's more things. Ponav L'mayla, Simen Yafalai. If a person dies with his face up, then it's a good sign for him. Ponav L'mata, Simen Rala. If his face is down, then it's a bad sign for him. Ton of klapei om simin yafalo. If he's facing the people when he passes away, then it's a good sign. Klapei akotel simin rala. If he's facing the wall, then it's a bad sign for him. One idea they say on the Zalderach Hamusa is if a person dies facing the people, like he's been looking after the people throughout his life, then and even his death, he's trying to accomplish something for the people, then it's a good sign. If he's just facing the wall, like all he cares about is himself and his family, then it's not such a good thing.
Like Yaakov faced all these sons and boys.
Yeah. He continues, pun of Yerukin Simen Raloi, pun of Tzuhumin Vadrumin Simen Yafalai. If his face is greenish, then it's a bad sign for him. If his face is bright and red, then it's a good sign for him. Again, because it means he's dying in a happy frame of mind. He sees the good that's awaiting him. Mes be'erev Shabbos Simen Yafalai, Motzei Shabbos Simen Raloi. If he dies on Erev Shabbos, it's a good sign for him. If he dies on Motzei Shabbos, it's a bad sign. Why is that? Rashi says because if he dies on Erev Shabbos, it means he's going right into Menucha. He's going right into the rest of Shabbos. Whereas Motzei Shabbos, you're beginning a whole new week, a whole new work week. There's a vort from the Baal Shem Tov on that. So what is, all these other things you could say, these are things you can control. You can make sure that you're not dying crying. You can make sure you're facing the people. What are you supposed to do about Erev Shabbos and Motzei Shabbos? He says, the Baal Shem Tov says, the Toldos Yaakov Yosef brings it, that it means if a person takes the view that, okay, I've done everything, I'm not involved with Gashmius anymore. The purpose of my death is basically I'm finished with the avodah in this world. This is like a preparation for Shabbos. Then whatever day of the week it is, it's considered that he's dying on Erev Shabbos, because that's the idea. You're going straight into Shabbos.
That reflects by
No, no, we're not saying about his look. Each of these is a separate thing. Mes be'erev Yom Kippurim Simen Ralo. If he dies on Erev Yom Kippur, it's a bad sign. Motzei Yom Kippurim Simen Yafalo. And that's a good sign, because if he dies Erev Yom Kippur, it means like he didn't even have a chance to get a part of Yom Kippur. If he dies Motzei Yom Kippur, it means that he went through Yom Kippur already. And one more thing, he says in the Braise, if a person dies from a stomach illness, hello, then it's a good sign for him. If Neshud Ruben shall tzaddikim, he's suffering b'cholim ayim, because most tzaddikim die of intestinal diseases. Now, why is that? What's the good thing? Hello. What's the good thing about intestinal diseases? There's a number of different explanations that Mephoshim give. Among them is the idea that, like, it cleans out the body, so like the person's body is tahor now. There's the idea that kind of thing, a person dies still in full control of all of their senses and everything. Like unlike many other kinds of causes of death, where a person is unconscious beforehand, here you have a person is fully conscious until the end. Also, Rashi mentions the idea that the Yisurim themselves are mechaper for him. There's a variety of different things. Anyway, so the point is, the point is, Reb Chiya is pointing out to him the first point, that you see that if a person passes away crying, it's not a bad sign for him. Why are you crying? Amalei, so Rebbe tells him, I'm not crying over the fact that I'm afraid of death. I'm crying over the Torah and mitzvahs that I'm going to be losing out on. So again, before we get to the answer, a couple of things about this. In Tavshin Nun Beis, one of the earliest shluchim in America, Moshe Yitzchak Hecht from Connecticut, passed away, and he passed away on a Friday, and the Rebbe delivered a sicha in connection with that, focusing on this Gemara over here. Among other things we mentioned over here, the Erev Shabbos versus Matzah Shabbos. The Rebbe points out in that sicha, if all Reb Chiya has to point out to Rebbe is it's not so good to be crying, why does he have to go through the whole rigmarole in the Braise? Just say the first part says, if you die crying, it's not a good simon. If you die happy, it's a good simon, and leave it at that. What does he have to mention? Everything else. The answer is, so the Rebbe starts by answering that what Reb Chiya was trying to accomplish with that is, even before we get into the answer, fine, Rebbe eventually is going to give the answer, atoro mitzvah kabachina, so in other words, that the crying is not in and of itself a bad simon. But Reb Chiya wants to, according to the assumption over here that Reb Chiya is talking to Rebbe, he wants to forestall the whole thing by pointing out good simonim, that good simonim that override it. Yes, there's the crying, but on the other hand, it's Erev Shabbos, as we learned yesterday, Rebbe passed away on Erev Shabbos. He's had cholim ayim, as we're going to learn soon, he had intestinal troubles, as we're going to learn soon in the Gemara. So therefore, Reb Chiya is kind of forestalling that they're leaving aside, yes, there might be potentially a problem with the crying, at least on the surface, even though maybe I understand that there's a deeper reason for it because it's a Torah mitzvah, but let's even forestall that by pointing out the good things that there are over here, the Erev Shabbos and the Cholim Yayim.
How does the line start? Which line is one?
Now we're up to the first line of the wide lines, the widest lines. Then the Rebbe goes on to point out, so when Rebbe is saying, Atoro mitzvahs kabachina, that I'm crying over the fact that I'm going to lose Torah and mitzvahs, so Taka, what's the answer to that? So the answer is, we learned yesterday that Rebbe Taka continued to come back even after he passed away. He wasn't free from Torah and mitzvahs, and therefore, it turns out that even his crying itself, even on the surface, it wasn't a negative thing. The Rebbe also goes on at some length to make the point, what's the advantage of passing away on Erev Shabbos? So maybe it's Mephoshim give different possibilities. If a person passed away on Erev Shabbos, then they're like Moshe Rabbeinu who passed away on Erev Shabbos. The Rebbe explains the idea is that a person passing away on Erev Shabbos, in the case of the Shliach Hecht, he saw it begashmias, he physically passed away on Erev Shabbos. In the case of Rebbe also, symbolically, passing away on Erev Shabbos represents the idea that, Erev Shabbos, they never developed the idea at some length in the Sikha. Erev Shabbos is a time when Lamayla, there's like a sleep, like the sleep that other magician had before Chava was created. And that sleep is in order to give a new koyach that starts on Shabbos. We find, for example, a Hill of Parashah used to sleep on Erev Shabbos for that reason. So therefore, the sleeping in this case, Rebbe passing away, which again is not a permanent sleep because we see he kept on coming back every Erev Shabbos, is like a preparation for a greater level of Torah and Mitzvahs that I'll have afterwards, and therefore it's a positive thing.
Why was he crying about Torah and Mitzvahs when he was going to learn Torah and Mitzvahs as an
Eden? But that's still Torah and Mitzvahs down here on Earth are much more important. Yeah.
This is where it counts, Doctor.
Yeah, this is where it counts. There's a famous verse they say from the Vilna Gaon before he passed away. He was holding on to his tzitzis and crying and saying, you know, think of it. You can buy a mitzvah like this in this world for a couple of pennies, and in other Babel, all the money in the world, everything in the world won't get it for you. Yeah. Anyway, so that's the sikha. There's another sikha where the Rebbe comments on the fact we're saying over here a person passed away Erev Shabbos. It's a good sign for him. About the Shabbos, it's not such a good sign. What about the fact we find several of the Rebbeim passed away Motzei Shabbos? The Alter Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, and our Rebbe also, in the end, Gimel Tammuz, when the Rebbe passed away, Gimel Tammuz was Motzei Shabbos. The answer is, the Rebbe says, is for regular people, yes, we're talking Erev Shabbos because they're going into Menucha versus Motzei Shabbos because he's starting a whole new work week. Mashenkin, for a Nasi, for a leader of the Jewish people, who doesn't live for himself, he lives on behalf of the people, Adarabi, he passes away Motzei Shabbos in order to show that he's not just going to go and rest there in Gan Eden. He's going to be keeping on working on behalf of the Jewish people. So there is a vort that's brought from the Arizal that person passed away Erev Shabbos, they won't have chibur takever. So that it's in that connection that I mentioned. The Baal Shem Tov says a vort, I mentioned it just before you came, that passing away on Erev Shabbos also symbolizes the idea, like the person is saying, I'm not living and dying in order for things of this world. I'm everything that I'm accomplishing in this world, and now that I'm getting ready to die, is as a preparation for Shabbos, as a preparation for the Ruchnius, for Ruchnius. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, back to the simple meaning of the Gemara. The point is that again, this whole story is Reb Chiya talking to Rebbe before he passed away. It sounds like Reb Chiya outlived Rebbe. And again, the third possibility, he buys same epoch. One possibility is you flip it around, that it's Rebbe talking to the Priya. He buys same lo olam lo epoch, or another possibility, you don't have to flip around any of these. You don't have to flip around any of these brises. All three of them are indeed Reb Chiya talking about Rebbe. So Reb Chiya did outlive Rebbe. Our original question, if Reb Chiya outlived Rebbe, why didn't Rebbe appoint him the new Rosh Hashiva? Why did he have to look for Reb Chanina bar Chama? The answer is Reb Chiya also for mitzvahs, however, because Reb Chiya was busy doing mitzvahs, as we're going to learn soon. So Rebbe figured, you know what, I don't want to appoint him Rosh Hashiva because then that'll take him away from the mitzvahs that he's accomplishing.
Which ones
are you? What are the mitzvahs? We find that when Reb Chanina and Reb Chiya were arguing, which one's way is better, Ben Yehoyada points out that they're arguing basically is the way of strictly learning Torah better, or the way that we're going to learn that Reb Chiya used to actually go out and do Mitzvah, basically. So Amalei Reb Chanina Leroy Chiya, Badi Di Minsas, you're arguing with me. Let me tell you what I could accomplish. The Im Chas V'Shalom Nishtakha Torah Mi'Yisrael. Minsas means arguing. The Im Chas V'Shalom Nishtakha Torah Mi'Yisrael. If Chas V'Shalom, the Torah would be forgotten by the Jewish people. Mahadanu Lemi Pipuli. I would be able to reconstruct it, to restore it all from my pupil. That's how much I know. Amalei Reb Chiya, so Reb Chiya tells him, you want to know something, I'm accomplishing more. I'm not Abdi Delemishtak, Chatoyim Yisrael. You're saying, if it gets forgotten, you could make it up for it. I'll make sure it won't get forgotten in the first place. What do I do? Daisina Kitna, I take flax, Sadina, and I plant it, Umagadalma Nishvi, then I use the flax to weave nets, Vitsiyavna Tavya, I trap deer, Umachilma Bistur Liyasmi, I take the meat of the deer, I shech them, I give the meat to Yisoyimim, so they have what to eat. I prepare scrolls out of the skins of the deer. I go to cities where there's no melandim, there's nobody to teach the children. I write out the five chumashim, one chumash for each of five children. I teach Baal Peh, the six daughter of the Mishnah, to six other kids. And then I tell each one of them, you go now and teach the Seder or the Chumash that you learned, you teach to all your friends. And that way, I make sure the Torah is never forgotten. So yeah, that's basically the argument between Reb Chanina and Reb Chiya, is that Reb Chanina feels it's more important to sit and learn Torah yourself, and Reb Chiya is telling him, yes, but, you know, after all, there's a mitzvah that can't be done, Ayudei Achedim, so therefore it's better, you know, you have to go out and do Afatzas Amayonis, and then and go teach people. What's the vort, by the way, what's the vort when he's saying that when he's going through all these steps, that I plant the flax and I weave the nets, etc. So many Mepharshim, the Marsha, and a number of later Mepharshim talk about the idea that he meant to say with that I don't just, that sure, you could go and buy Sfarim, he can go buy Sfarim in the stores or whatever. But he wants to make sure that every detail of it is done b'kedusha over Tara, with the kavana that he's doing it on behalf of these children that he's going to teach. And that way, it's much more effective in actually.
So what do you do with the flax?
So that's the thing. So you have to actually go plant the flax himself, weave the nest himself, etc. Everything has to be done by him in order that the koyach of it will go into these children.
But the same time, not even soft to buy the book.
No, but still, you could find professional, they had professional sofrim in those days who would write out for him, he could have bought them from them, but then it wouldn't have the same effect.
Sure.
Yeah, I understand, but still, there were places where you could buy them. You could buy handwritten ones, yeah. There's a sikha someplace where the Rebbe connects it with the famous expression of Siddus Ilun Tabinu Lachdev Eitzim, that if the Eivishter commanded us to chop wood, even though it's something that doesn't engage our brains at all, we would still do it with the same amount of Kabbalah cell. The same thing, the planting the flax and weaving the net and so forth is not something that Reb Chiya, of all people, has to accomplish, but it's still all part of his avodah, and therefore he does it with just as much chayus as the actual teaching. Who said anything about 6 months? Didn't say. So during that time, the flax is growing. Obviously, he's learning and teaching and whatever. Yeah, we're not talking about that, but yeah. Behind him, the Omer Rebbe, Kamagdil, the Maisa Chia. So this is what Rebbe says. How great are the deeds of Chia? So therefore, that's what we're saying, that Rebbe felt that even to make him Rosh Hashiva would be taking him away from that important avodah of his.
You can do
me time,
then become Rosh Hashiva. So
yeah, basically. Oh, hello. Amalei Reb Shimon Bar Devi. So Reb Shimon Bar Devi asked him, when you're saying Tamag Doyle Maisechia, does that mean Afilu Mimcha? Does that mean even greater? They're even greater than what you yourself do. Amalei Ein. Yeah. Amalei Reb Shmuel Bar Yosi. So Reb Shmuel Bar Yosi asked him, Afilu Mi'aba? Does that mean that you're implying that what Reb Chia accomplishes is even greater than what my father Reb Yosi accomplished? Amalei says to him, Chas V'Shalom Lo Tekezos Bitzrach. Chas V'Shalom. Such a thing should never be said among Jewish people. Rebbe had a lot of covered for Reb Chiya. For Reb Yosi. We find in various places in Shas. You want to say that Reb Chiya is greater than me? Sure. Rebbe, we said before, was a great honor. But to say that he's greater than Reb Yosi, that's going too far. Amalehen. Now Rebbe says to his children, after he'd called in his children before and given them basic instructions about giving kavod to their mother and the table set up, etc., that we learned about yesterday, he called in the Chachmei Yisrael and told them who's going to have which jobs. Now Amalehen, l'vni katna nitzarech, I need my younger son. Nichnas Reb Shimon Esle, Masala Sidre Chachma. So Reb Shimon comes in and Rebbe teaches him the Seder of Chachma. What it means, the Seder of Chachma, there's various explanations that Mephoshim give. Some of them talk about that it means he taught him Maisa Merkava and the various other things of the deep Chachma of Torah. Others say it means more the kind of things like it talks about in Pirkei Avos, Shiva Dvarim B'Chacham, Shiva B'Golam, etc. Those kinds of things, the way that a Chacham has to behave. Then he tells them, I need my older son. And Rebbe gives him over the Seder of how to act as a Nasi. He tells him, Bni, Nahoig Nasius Chabaramim, conduct your Nasius with the great, in a high way, with the high ones. So Rashi says it actually means with the high ones, meaning that you should make sure that the great people are surrounding you. So you'll be like a king who's surrounded by his top advisors and whatnot. You should make sure that there's the top people surrounding you. Other Mepharshim talk about the idea that it also means like make sure that you. The Marsha talks about the idea that it means that to the greater Talmidim, you know, you're higher above them. You know, show you know. You're higher above them, but you know, show that you have a relationship with them. You know, that you have a certain rapport with them. There's also an interesting verse I saw brought from Rabbi Hutner. He said there was a guy who was one of the Talmidim, I think, was being appointed a rabbi someplace. He tells him as a marshal, you know, the people of the city needed to have a clock so everybody in town will know what time various things are supposed to happen. They had to put the clock very high up. Why? Two reasons. Number one, so everybody will see it. And number two, because if you have it low down, everybody's going to adjust the hand however they see fit, whatever time they want it to be. So the clock has to be high up so nobody can tamper with it. So he tells them the same thing. You have to make sure you have to be high up above the people, number one, so they look up to you. And number two, so nobody tampers with you and gets you to change your ways. That's in the Hog Nasius Chabaramim, that you have to act as a Nazi. You're higher up and you're not going to be swayed by what people want. And he continues, Zroik Mora B'Talmidim. Put a bitterness into the Talmidim, which means that they should fear you, they should respect you. In Tanya and again, the Kodesh Dalet that ever points out that a Rebbe has to have a blend of Chesed and Gvura with a student. The Chesed is the Nehoi Gvasilus Chobur Ramim, that you're high up, you're coming down and teaching them on their level. But on the other hand, Zeroik Mora B'Talmidim, when there comes a time when you have to act to them with Gvura to show that after all, you know, you're not on the level you're supposed to be. And in fact, the Rambam also mentions it in the Alter Rebbe course of the Talmud Torah, that if the Rebbe sees that the Talmudim are not paying attention, then he should yell at them, and he should punish them, and whatever. That's all part of the Zroi Gemara of the Talmudim. You have to know when to use Gvura. Gemara says, Eini, is that so? You're telling me that you should make that the Talmudim should fear you? There's a pasuk in Tehillim that says about a tzaddik that he fears, that the ones who fear Hashem he honors. This refers to King Yehoshaphat of Yehuda. When he would see a Tamar Chacham, he would stand up, Yehoshaphat would stand up off his throne, he would hug him and kiss him, Rebbe, Mori, Mori, and he would call him, my Rebbe, my teacher. So we see that you have to act with covet to a Tamar Chacham, not to cast a fear and an awe over them, like he's telling him, Zurich Mori Tamidim. Then it's like Asha Habitzina Haba Pahestia. One's talking about in private, then you give everybody covered. But Pahestia, you have to show them who's boss, basically. So you have to, after all, you're the Nasi and they're not, and you have to make sure that's known. Yeah. Tanya. Now we're going to get to when. So now we've talked about all of the instructions that Rebbe gave before he passed away. Now what happened when he passed away? Tanya, we learn in a braise. So Rebbe Mutal B'Tzipori. Rebbe was lying in bed. On his deathbed in Tzipori, but the place that was prepared for him to be buried was in Beis Sharim. And by the way, they found Beis Sharim. They're both towns in northern Eretz Yisrael in the Galil. They found, by the way, they found in archaeological digs 40 or 50 or I don't know how many years ago, they found a whole Beis Achayim there in Beis Sharim. Apparently once Rebbe was buried over there, then it became like, you know, this is the place for everybody chashur to be buried. Looks like we ran out of Gemara's up here, so you may have to get one or two from downstairs. So what do you mean? The Gemara says, Valtanya, what do you mean, Rebbe? What do you mean, Rebbe lived in Sukkoti? Valtanya, tzedek, tzedek, tzedek. The pasuk says, We learn in a braisa, and the full braisa is in Sanhedrin, that when the pasuk says, tzedek, 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 you should always pursue justice and righteousness. It means in general that you should always try to go to the best based in there is. Holach ha-chachamim yeshiva, the expression is over there. You should always go follow the chachamim to where the yeshiva is and then go there for dinei Torah. And among them is holach ha-rebbe the Beis Sharim. That you should go to Rebbe's Beis Sharim. So Rebbe lived in Beis Sharim. He wasn't just buried there. The answer is Rebbe the Beis Sharim. However, Rebbe did originally live in Beis Sharim. Ella given the cholash, but when he became sick, then they brought him to Tzipori, Dimidalia, because Tzipori is higher up, it's on a mountaintop, or Boston Avira, and therefore the air is clearer there, and they figured it'll be Rebbe better for Rebbe's health. It wasn't just, by the way, a short thing. The Yerushalmi mentions, it's the Yerushalmi or Medrash, I don't remember, that says that Rebbe actually lived in Tzipori for 17 years. And he said on himself the same way as it says on Vayichi Yaakov, the Eretz Mitzrayim, Shvayat Yishona, the same thing Vayichi Yehuda, but Tzipori, Shvayat Yishona. He actually lived there for 17 years, but beforehand he had lived in Beis Sharim, and that's why the place to bury him was prepared there. Okay, Hahu Yom Dinoch Nafshid Rebbe on the day that Rebbe passed away, Gozer Rabbanon Tanisa, the Rabbanon were Gozer Tanis, Ubo Rachmi, and they're davening for Rachmanus from the Eibushet, but Amri, and they said a sharp thing. Kol man de omer noch nafshid Rebbe. Anybody who says that Rebbe has passed away, yedoker becherev will be pierced with a sword. Now, why such a strong lashon? I mean, after all, well, you know, you can't prevent the inevitable. So every one of the mafarshim has their own little take on this. The Shittim Kubetzis to start with says an interesting thing. He says, what are they? They're davening the whole time for Rebbe to keep on living. Well, as long as they don't know that Rebbe passed away, they can continue davening. And you know what? Their tefillahs can actually accomplish, as long as nobody has actually come and said he passed away, where, as we know, the famous thing from Hayyim Yim, that a person's words have a certain effect in the world, as long as nobody says this, yes, their tefillahs might even accomplish that the Eibishter is Mechayim Mason, that the Eibishter brings him back to life. So therefore, they said this sharp thing, nobody had better say Nobody had better say that he passed away, because that will make it inevitable, that it'll make it that we can't daven anymore for him to come back alive. And by the way, Beni Aryada points out their tefillahs didn't go to waste. When we learned yesterday that Rebbe used to come back every Erev Shabbos and make Kiddush for his family, etc., that was in the schuz of all these tefillahs, that his talmidim did. So in the end, he kind of passed away, as we're going to say soon, but these tefillahs still had that effect.
To the point that
he could come back. Various other Mepharshim talk about other ideas. There's one, the Rabbi Yaakov Emden says one. He says that the Eibishter is certainly not going to make it that Rebbe is going to pass away without anybody there to attend to him. That would be a bazillion for the tzaddik. Therefore, if nobody is there, if nobody can actually say that he passed away, then he won't be able to. And so what happened, we'll see soon. But wait. There's different other possibilities that are brought up. There's the idea that Rebbe wrote the Mishnah, we know. So he kind of represents Torah Shebaal Peh. And as long as any time we learn a Mishnah, Sfasav Dovev Es Bekever, Rebbe's lips move in the grave, which means that he's still, in a certain sense, alive. If anybody says, Noch Napshi de Rebbe, that Rebbe has passed away, it's like saying Torah Shebaal Peh doesn't count for anything. Somebody says Torah Shebaal Peh doesn't count for anything, that's pretty serious business. Well, Noitzi Dibo Hufil, fine, that doesn't explain why they pierced him with a sword. You don't want them to say the bad news. That wouldn't explain why they should go as far as killing such a person.
What are we talking about?
The Mishnah, Gemara, everything that. Okay. Well, what happened? Slika Amse de Rebbe Leigra. So Rebbe's maid servant went up to the roof. Amra, and she said like this: Al Yonim Mevakshim Es Rebbe, Vatachtanim Mevakshim Es Rebbe. The higher ones want Rebbe. They want Rebbe's neshama in Gan Eden. The lower ones also want Rebbe down here on earth. Yehirot, and she akayfor Tachtanim Es Al Yonim. So Yehirot, and that the lower ones should overpower the upper ones. Yes, let Rebbe stay down here on earth. Marsha says an interesting thing on it. He says that the Al Yonim and Tachtanim is within Rebbe himself. There's Rebbe's neshama and his guf. His neshama wants to go to Lamaila. As we know, the whole idea of the neshama is always as rotzer, that the neshama wants to return to the Eibishter. The guf wants Rebbe to stay down here. Rebbe's guf itself was a guf kodesh, so it wants Rebbe's neshama to stay with it, so continue doing mitzvahs. Halavai, the guf should overpower and attack and be able to stay down here. And actually, the Marsha says that's another thing why the Talmudim were saying Yidaka Becherev, because they were saying Rebbe is on a completely different level than the average person. Rebbe has refined his body so much that he shouldn't have to die like a regular person dies. So anybody who says Noch Napshi de Rebbe is denying that idea of the specialty of Rebbe, therefore Yidaka Becherev. So according to that, she's saying the same thing, that the Rebbe's body itself should overpower his neshama and he should stay down here. Well, Piven Kazoi Kama Zimni Da Ayala Besakise, but then she saw he kept on having to go to the bathroom, because we said before he had stomach problems. V'chalat Tfilin Umanachlu, and every time he had to go, he had to take off his Tfilin, and then when he's done, he'd put him right back on. Which technically, Tosva says he should have been potter from Tfilin altogether then, in that Choyle Me'ayim HaPotter Min HaTfilin. But he knew how to be careful, but still, it was a... Well, Choyle Me'ayim, where a person is, a usual person, as Choyle Me'ayim, is not able to control themselves. They may at any time, therefore, they technically they're potter. But Rebbe, who was Noyeg B'Kedusha, knew how to be careful, but still, it was a hassle for it to take off, put on, etc. And he's also part of the tzar, is also the fact that he's missing out on the mitzvah of tefillin during this time. Amra, she said, you know what, Yehirot, and she akayfor Yonim HaSatachtonim. In that case, then I change my tefillah. Yehirot, and that the upper ones should overpower the lower ones. Yes, it's time that Rebbe should pass away already. And that's Marsha explains in accordance with his thing, that she's saying that, look, given that Rebbe's goof is having the star of the taking off and putting on tefillin, then obviously, you know what, it is time for the neshama and the goof to separate. This, by the way, this Shir Kofro Yonim Estachtonim is not such a simple thing. What does this mean? It amounts to she's davening that a person should die? Are you b'chal allowed to do that? So the Rebbe Akiva Eger in Guri Nashasti quotes from refers to a Ran in Nedarim that says that yes, if a person is critically ill and there's no hope for him, then yes, you're allowed to daven for them. Yep. So the whole Shuvah from Rav Moshe Feinstein that talks about that in connection with present day medicine, with modern medicine. If you have a person who's incurably ill, of course there's no question, there's no pulling the plug or any such thing, Chas v'Shalom, but not necessarily is there. To some extent, it's a case-by-case basis, but there are certain cases when the doctors say that a person is incurably ill and there's no hope for him. Then yes, you don't necessarily have to do life prolonging kinds of medications. You can't take away what they have, but you don't necessarily.
Pray for a miracle.
You can daven for whatever you want, sure, but yeah. Yeah.
No,
but Rabbi's saying that. But the Rambam said the Rebbe, you're saying that, yeah. Because you're saying that given the circumstances, yeah. Why have a shafti rabbanon milamibi rachmi, but the rabbanon were still continuing to daven. So, shakla kuza, she was still standing up there on the roof, she took a jug, a clay jug, shadya me'igra la'ara, and she threw it down from the roof to the ground, and it shattered, and that noise all of a sudden startled them. Ishtiku mirachmi, for a second they stopped davening. But not after the Rebbe, and at that moment, Rebbe passed away. What's the symbolism of the jug? A couple of different ideas. Marshall says, continuing with his idea about Rebbe's neshama and guf, that the jug represents the guf, like a kli cheres represents the guf. Like she's saying, you know what, it's time to act for the guf to give up. Like the a kli cheres, once it becomes tummy, the only thing you can do is break it. So the same thing, like there comes a point when the guf has to just break and let the neshama go. Not the Malach HaMavet, we were saying before that he wasn't necessarily Malach HaMavet, but whatever. At that moment, their tefillos weren't protecting him anymore. Yeah. Amr lit up on the bar kapara. So now they realized, you know what? We stopped davening for a second. Maybe during that time, what happened? So they told bar kapara, Zilayin, go check out what the situation is. Ozel, he went ashkecha dinoch nashe, and he found that Rebbe had passed away. Kari, he didn't want to tell them out direct. Kari, first of all, because Moiti Dibhuksil, and second of all, because of the threat from before. So Kari Lodavushe, he tore his clothes, Vahadri Lakari Lachore, but he turned the torn part to the back. The clothes they wore in those days were more like a palace or something, so too you could easily, it wasn't like a shirt or something, or there was a, you know, something that you could easily drape it differently and say yeah. Pasach ba'amar, and he starts saying like this, Er'elim u'mitzukim achzu ba'aron ha'kodesh, the Er'elim meaning malachim, u'mitzukim and the tzaddikim who are the foundations of the world, achzu ba'aron ha'kodesh, each one is holding on to the aron ha'kodesh, nitzchu er'elim u'mitzukim, but the malachim have overpowered the tzaddikim, v'nish ba'aron ha'kodesh, and the aron ha'kodesh has been taken captive. So the Er'elim then means the malachim. So the Marshal explains that also this is what he uses the expression Aron HaKodesh as if to say, like, there's the Luchos inside the Aron, which represents the Neshama, and then there's the Aron HaKodesh, which represents the Guf. The Luchos, the Neshama, sure, that's still with us. And as we know from Chassidus, Yatim v'Chayoi. But the Guf, the Aron HaKodesh, the Malachim were able to seize it. Amar lo noch nafshe, are you telling us he passed away? Amar lo, he says, Atim kamritu, v'ano lo kamina. Okay, you said it, I didn't. B'shas p'tiros ishur Rebbe, when Rebbe was passing away, Zakuf etzes ba'oitz of klapimayla, he lifted up his 10 fingers upward, v'omar, and he said, Rebbeinu Shlalem, golu v'yadur l'fanecha she'agaiti b'eses ba'oitz b'torah, you know very well that I slaved away with my 10 fingers on Torah, v'loi nehan nesi afilu b'es b'ktana, I never had hana even with a small finger. So there's a couple of different explanations what it means. So Rashi says it means, for example, even the amount of work that a person would do with their little finger, even that I didn't have. And Tosfos mentions in connection with that a medrash that a person should always daven the madanim, that delicacies don't enter his body. Like we see over here that Rebbe is saying, I never had hanah from the world. That's what brings it in Peres Tanya, that the average person has to go through Chibur Takever to get rid of the Gashmius that got stuck to his neshama, unless the person is like Rabbeinu HaKadosh, where we're saying over here they never had Hana from the world. There's a couple of long sichas from the Rebbe, from Chochet, that I think they brought in the Kutti Burim on Tanya, why the Alter Rebbe, what the Alter Rebbe means with all of this. I mean, what you expect the average person to be like Rabbeinu HaKadosh. On the one hand, we're saying that, no, he's Kaddosh, he's beyond us. But on the other hand, he's Rabbeinu, he is our Rebbe, so we do have what to learn from him. Even though, now we learn, the Gemara mentions in Avodah Zarah, and Tosfos over there discusses our Gemara over here, it says there that Rebbe always had, not just the plain food he had on his table, he always had tznoin b'chazeres, radishes, and lettuce, which is a delicacy during seasons of the year when you can't get them, but Rebbe was so rich he always had them. So the Rebbe explains in these sichas, it means the Rebbe ate them, but he didn't eat them for the purpose of having hana from them. He ate them as part of that there needs to be. There's people by his table, there needs to be covered over there, but he didn't eat them just for the hana. But that's what he's saying over here, that at the end of his life, that I didn't have hana even to the extent of an esbek dam.
In terms of Tanya, Russian Tanya, would you say that he was really a tzaddik gamur?
I guess, yeah. That would seem to be the idea. Different explanation of Yaakov Emden brings the idea that the ten fingers represent the fingers that he had to use to write the Mishnah. We know that Rebbe wrote the Mishnah. When he's saying that I didn't have hanach, espektana means I didn't have any covered. I wasn't impressed by any of the covered that I got for that for writing down Torah Shebal Peh. Anyway. So Yehi Rotzin Milfanacha Shiyeh Shalom B'Menachasi. He says that it should be the Eibishter's will that there should be peace in my rest. That my goof should rest peacefully. Yotz Baskov Amra. So Baskov came out and said, yes, Yavoi Shalom, as the pasuk says, he'll come in peace. Yonuchu Amish Kavoytam. They will rest on their beds and in their lying places. Question is, what do you mean? Amish Kavoy Sam Lashon Rabim. Amish Kav Chavi Barilei. The first part of the passage is Yavoi Shalom in the singular. It should continue in the singular. You know, Amish Kav Cho, Amish Kavoy, whatever. Why Amish Kavoy say Amish Kavoy Sam? The answer is Nesai Lele Rav Chia Baganda. This proves what Rav Chia Baganda said. The Amr Rav Chia Baganda, Amr Rav Yesi Ben Shol. B'shar Shah Tzadik Niftim in Oilom. When a Tzadik passed away, Omer Malacha Asharis Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Malacha Asharis tell the Ebishter to Benishol, and Tzadik Pliny Ba. Such and such a Tzadik is coming. So he tells them, in that case, Yavoyu Tzadikim, Yetzel HaKrasai, then the Tzadikim should come and come greet him. And what do they tell him? Yavoyu B'Shalom, he should come in peace. And then the pasuk continues, Yonuchu Amish Kavoytam. Then all those Tzadikim who came out to greet him, they go and rest back where they were before. So the Mishkavoytam is referring to the Tzadikim who came out to escort him. Amar Rav Elazar, B'Shal Shah Tzadik Niftim in Olam, when a Tzadik passed away, Shalosh Kittas from Malachi Asharis Yotzes L'Krasai, three groups of Malachi Asharis come to greet him. Achas Emeres Led Boi B'Shalim, one says to him, come in peace, or Yavoi B'Shalim, whatever. V'Achas Emeres Hoylech Nechoychei, another one quotes another pasuk that says, he walks in a straight path. V'Achas Emeres Led Yavoi Shalom Yanuch HaAmish Kavoytam, the third one says, you should come in peace and rest and rest in your resting place. So what's the idea of the three groups? So again, a lot of different explanations. Marsha connects it with there's the higher world, the middle world, and the lower world, which I guess he doesn't use these terms, but I guess he means Briya Yitzirasiya, that in each one of them the tzaddik had an effect, and therefore each one of them says something to greet him. And the Maharal talks about the idea that there's three aspects of the tzaddik's relationship with the Eibishter. There's the Sarusa del Eila, that the Eibishter loves the tzaddik and wants him to be close to him. There's the Sarusa del Sata, that says the tzaddik wants to be close to the Eibishter. And there's the actual mitzvah that he does. So corresponding to each of those is one of these expressions. V'shashar Rasha Neved Min Olam, conversely, when a Rasha is destroyed from the world, Shalosh Kittas from Malacha Chabala, Yotzes L'Krasai, then three groups of destroying Malachim come to greet him. Achas Emeres Ein Shalom Omer Hashem L'Rashayim, one says that Hashem says there's no peace for the Rashayim. V'achas Emeres L'Matzeva Yishkav, another one quotes another pasuk that says, you'll lie down in upsetness, in a way of being upset. V'achas Emeres L'Rudav Hashkav Es Arelim, and the third one says, go down and lie with the Arelim, with the uncircumcised ones, meaning the Goyim who are uncircumcised in Gashmius and also in Ruchnius. Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of the Almana, what rights she has after her husband passes away, Kolzman Shiva Beisavia, as long as the Almana is living in her father's house, and as we said in the previous Mishnah, the Yoshim support, give her food over there, they bring her food over there, they deduct from it the amount of Birkas HaBayis, like we talked about yesterday, but they're still responsible for supporting her, Goyva Ksubas Elo'ilam, that she can collect her Ksuba anytime, whenever she wants it, even after many, many years. Calls Manchi, Bebeis Baila, whereas as long as she's living in her husband's house together with the Yoshim, Goyva Ksubasad, Esim B'chamish Shanim. Then she only has 25 years to collect her Ksuba, and if she hasn't collected in 25 years, she loses it. Why 25 years? She yesh B'chamish Shanim, Shatasa Toiva, Kenem Ksubasa. Because the Chachamim figured out that 25 years is the amount of time usually that she'll have done favors for her neighbors, equaling the amount of her Ksuba, which means neighbors always, neighbors give each other bread, salt, other kitchen necessities. And it's coming out of what's in the house. So when she's living there with the assignment, the Chachamim estimated that after 25 years, she's given away enough stuff to equal the value of her ksuba. What? Maybe. Okay, but not. Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily go towards the household. Okay, I don't know. That doesn't necessarily go towards the household expenses. Okay. That's what the mayor says in the name of Shimon Gamliel, that the 25 years applies in that case when she's living with the Yoshim in her husband's house. The Chum says it the other way around. No, if she's living in the husband's house, she can collect the ksuba forever. calls Manchi Bevei Safiya Bevei Sabasad Asim Chamashanim, whereas if she's living in her father's house, then she only has the 25 years. What's the difference? The reason is because if she's living together with the Yisayimim, then because they're not just giving her food, they're giving her food in her father's house also, but she's living with them, they're honoring her, etc., so therefore she may be embarrassed to ever bring up the matter of the Ksuvah. So therefore we can't assume she was Moichah on it. Whereas if she's living in her father's house after 25 years, why are you, there's no reason you should be embarrassed to them. Why didn't you ever bring it up? Obviously you were Moichah. And one more thing, Mesa, what if the Amana dies? Yosheha Maskirin Ksubasa Adrasim V'chamishanim. Then the Yisayimim, that her Yoshim have 25 years in which to mention her Ksubah. To make a machal, that would not necessarily, before we should talk about that they actually have to sue in Beis Din or not, according to Rashi, it's at least they have to say, you know what, nu, where's the Ksubah? And again, if they haven't in 25 years, then it's lost. Okay. So, 25. Right. I asked Rabbi Yosef, what do you mean according to the mayor that was saying that the 25 years is when she's living together with the Yoshim, because we're assuming that over that time the stuff she's given her neighbors adds up to the value of the Ksuba. So what's the logic? So what's the logic? 25 years applies whether it's a poor woman or she gives a small amount, or Marjabas Baisis, a famous rich woman from the times of the end of the second Mishnah. She mentioned that Agatha, the Churban and Gittin, that she was fabulously rich. For her also, we mentioned her here and there, yeah. So she also, you would actually expect that her ksuba is used up in 25 years. I'm like, yeah, lafum gam l'shichna, as the expression goes, according to the camel is the load. Meaning, in this case, the richer the person, the more they're going to be giving their neighbors. So yes, marchabas spices, proportionately, is going to be giving a lot more bread and salt and kitchen stuff and whatever to her neighbors than Ani Yishav Yisrael. So now they have the question that a mayor maushit the shalish. According to the mayor's logic, if we're saying the idea is after 25 years she's used up the whole value of the ksuba, in that case should we prorate it? 2 years have passed, she hasn't collected the ksuba yet. She's lost, let's say, 8% of the ksuba because by that time she's used up that amount. Take, we don't know. And what's the svaras on it is, on the one hand, you could argue that maybe only when you say it's used up the whole value should you know whatever. Yeah.
What's the relationship between giving to the neighbors and the ksuba?
Because the assumption is that after that amount, according to the mayor, the assumption is after that amount of time, the amount of bread and salt and spices and whatnot that she's lent her neighbors, that she's given her neighbors, and not necessarily do you get it back. When you lend a quart of milk to your neighbor, you don't necessarily get it back. Then over time, that adds up. So Mela, okay, you know, she's doing mitzvahs, so therefore maybe the Yerushim don't mind. But there comes a point already after 25 years when it's added up to a substantial amount.
It's there.
It's there. The whole, everything in the house.
That she's
yeah,
the,
essentially, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then that amounts to the
yeah. Yeah. Okay, then we said, V'chum and Kolzman. The Chum say, no, it's the other way around, that if she's living with the Yerushim, then she has forever. If she's living in her husband's house, in her father's house, then it's 25 years. So Amalei Abaye L'Rav Yosef. So what's the logic? What about, let's say, the end of the 25 years comes? Asoi Kodim Shkia Tachamad Goyva Ksubasa. You're telling me then that if she comes before Shkia, of the last day of the 25 years, she'll still be able to collect her Ksuba. La'acha Shkia Tachamad Goyva. After Shkia Tachamad, she won't be able to collect it anymore. What's the logic? Bahi Purta Achilta. That small amount of time she'll have been Moichel Ksuba. Amalei Ein. He says yes. Kol Midas Chachamim Kein He. This is how all the Midas of the Chachamim work.
What's Purta Achilta?
In that small amount of time, achilta shall have been moichel. So the answer is yes, that's how the Chachamim work these things. For example, by boim sa tovel, you can tovel only in full 40 sa of water, by boim sa chasav kurta of any achalit of the hand. Whereas the 40 sa is missing one kurta, which is a small amount, it's like one sixth or something of a lug. So you're talking like a half an ounce or something is missing from the mikveh, you can't tovel it. And the same, the Gemara in other places, the Gemara brings several other examples that we see when the Chachamim set up a certain shear, that's it, it's an absolute thing. Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rab, Heid Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi lifnei Rabbi. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi said Eidrus in front of Rabbi, Sha'amu Mishum Aviv, that he said in the name of his father. When do we say this, that there's a limit of 25 years? Lo'ishanu ela she'en sh'tai ksuba yoytzi mitachas yedeh. This is all only talking about if she doesn't have the actual written ksuba in her hands. For example, we talked about earlier in the Masechta, we talked about a few weeks ago, that there were places where b'chlal, the minhag was never to write the ksuba. They would just depend, and the whole thing would be baal peh. No, that wasn't Yehuda versus Yehuda versus Galil was the exact thing of up until when she's entitled to mezonos. Is it as long as she wants, or is it until they pay her ksuba? Whatever. No, there were different minhagim, whether they actually wrote out a ksuba or whether they just did it b'alpeh. So if she doesn't have a ksuba, then she has the 25-year limit. But if she has the shtag ksuba in her hand, go with ksubas la'olam, then she can collect the ksuba forever, because if she had been mochel to them, she would have given them the shtag. Whereas Rabbi Laza says, no, even if she has the shtag ksuba in her hand, she can still only collect until 25 years are up. Most of Rav Sheshes says, I have a contradiction from a b'risa, on what you're saying that there's a difference whether she has a shtar or not. A b'risa says, Baal Choyv goy v'shaloyva has Torah, that a Baal Choyv can collect without having to mention, even let's say this that we're saying in the Mishnah, that after 25 years she may have been mochelet, that doesn't apply to a Baal Choyv. If Reuven owes Shimon money, and for many years Shimon has not tried to collect on the loan, doesn't mean he was mochelet. 50 years can pass and he's still entitled to it. Now, hey, chidami, now what are we talking about?
No.
Yovel doesn't cancel. Yovel doesn't. First of all, Shmita that cancels loans, not Yovel. Second of all, there could be a perusal. And third of all, whatever. No, Yovel has nothing to do with it. Hey, chidami, what are we talking about? Idloi nokit shtara. If this Baal Chayv does not have a shtar in his hand, the my gobi, what are they going to collect with anyway? Of course, there's going to come a point when he can't collect. Ella de nokit shtara. Obviously, we have to be talking about he's holding a shtar in his hand. And Ubal Choyvu Dalat Barachulihu. So we're saying the Baal Choyv is not going to be Mochel on his Choyv. Ha Amona Achilta, which would imply that the Amona is being Mochel. So even she has the Ksuba in her hands, what are you telling me over here that if she has, what are you telling me, Rabbi Shmuel Ben Rabbi Yosi, that if she has the Ksuba she can collect forever? From this Braisa, it seems more like Rabbi Lazar, that it doesn't matter whether she has the Ksuba or not, there comes a point when she's Mochel. Because we're saying there's a distinction between her and a Baal Choyv.
Because
the Braisa is mentioning a Baal Choyv, which seems to imply, but not an Amana. Who most of love, who yeah, but that's a different kind of Choyv, though. A Baal Choyv is somebody who actually lent out money. The Amana didn't lend out money. Rashi points out there's two reasons to assume that the Amana is more likely to be Mochel than the Baal Choyv. Number one, she's benefited from them all these years. They've been supplying her with mazonos, etc. She's been living in the house rent-free. The Baal Choyv doesn't have any of that. Number two, there's the fact that she didn't put out money originally, but the Baal Choyv did. Okay. Who moisted love of whom farak law? So if Shay just asked the question, he also answered it. La'olam the lenokit shtara, that no, we are actually talking about the Baal Choyv is not holding a shtar. So therefore, you could say that if the Baal Choyv isn't holding a shtar, nevertheless, he can collect forever. But an amana, there'd be a limit, which fine, that would agree with Rabbi Shmuel Ben Rabbi Yosi. The b'risa, though, would be talking about a case where the one who owes the money admits, yes, I never paid off the loan. So even though there's no shtar, the point of the b'risa would be, you might have thought, yes, the guy was moida, but it's many, many years later, maybe at this point the Baal Choyv was moida. No, we said that was moichel. No, we said the Baal Choyv we can't assume was moichel.
Unless you say it.
Question is, but didn't Rabbi Ila say shoinin? They learn a brisa that says grusha harek baal choyv, that a woman who is divorced is considered like a baal choyv, that she can collect forever. And the question is, hechidomi, what are we talking about? Idla nikita ksuba. Again, if she's not holding a ksuba in her hand, but my gavya, what's she going to collect with? How's she going to have a proof that mela with an amana she can bring edim that her husband's dead? But out of Grusha, what other proof does she have that she was divorced other than the ksuba? Well, yes, the ksuba, yes. Ella lav the nikita ksuba. Obviously, we have to be talking about that she's holding the ksuba. And u Grusha hi delav batacholihi. Again, we would say that the implication is that a Grusha is not going to be mochel because she's not living with the yisoyimim and benefiting from them, etc. Ha amona achilta. Evidently, an amona would be mochel. So you see that even if she has the ksuba, there comes a point when we assume the amona is mochel. And so it's Hachanamik Shechayev Moida. Fine, this Braisa could also be talking about where her husband or his Yoshim or whatever admits that no, she never received her ksuba. So in that case, we would say that there's a difference between a Grusha and an Amona. A Grusha would never be Mochel because she's not anyway having any compensatory benefit. The Amona would eventually be Mochel. But if she has a Shtar, the Braisa might not be talking about that. If she has a ksuba. Okay. Amar of Nachum Beitzchak. Tony Rav Yehuda Bar Koza b'masnisa de Bar Koza. Rav Yehuda Bar Koza, that was his name, and taught in a braisa that was taught in the yeshiva of Bar Koza. So apparently it was a family yeshiva. Tova Ksubasa, if the Amana demand comes and sues for Huksuba and Beis Din, Hare Kibatchila, then it's like then we start all over again. Then the 25 years count from that. So her husband died 10 years ago. Now she goes and sues them in Beis Din, the clock resets. The new 25 years begins from then.
To collect the
Ksuba, yeah. Vim Hoyesh Shtar Ksuba, Yoyt Mitachas Adea.
An action of 25 years.
Yeah. And if she has a ksuba in her hand, then this bride says she should collect the ksuba forever. Okay. Shalach le'Rav Nachman Baruch Chisda le'Rav Nachman by Yaakov. This Rav Nachman by Yaakov, by the way, is the standard Rav Nachman throughout Shas. That we hear the Gemara have to call him Rav Nachman by Yaakov because we had Rav Nachman Baruch Chisda. Usually it's just called Rav Nachman plain. Anyway, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, the Rebbe teach us, in our Mishnah, kishishtar ksuba yotze mitachas yod machlokas, is the machlokas in our Mishnah in the case when she has the ksuba in her hand, or is it when she doesn't have the ksuba in her hand? And also, the halacha kedivrei mi, and also in our Mishnah, who's the halacha, like the mayor or the chachamim?
You said just now that she did
have the ksuba. No, we said if she had the shtar ksuba, then she could collect forever. But that was the price that we just quoted. Now Rav Nachman is asking Rav Nachman, what's the bottom line halacha? Going back to our Mishnah.
Well, what does it collect for forever? What does it mean forever?
Forever means that she can collect. She can come 50 years later and say, I never received my ksuba.
No limit.
But shall I come to Kavula Baktuva?
Yes, actually the Gemara is going to talk about later, we'll do it tomorrow, whether are we talking about the Ikka Ksuba, are we talking about the basic 200 or 100, or are we talking about the Toisvus or both? We'll get to that, So is the Machlokas in our Mishnah when she's holding the Ksuba in her possession or not? And number two, Ba'alacha Kedivrei Mi, who's the Halacha like in our Mishnah? Shalach Lei, he answered him back. Number one, the Machlokas in our Mishnah is only if she does not have the Ksuba in her hand. But if she has the ksuba in her hand, she can collect it forever. And number two, the halacha kedivrei chachamim. Even if she doesn't have the ksuba, the halacha is like the chachamim that only if she's living with the yisoyimim does she have the 25-year limit. Or no, then she doesn't have the 25-year limit. If she's not living with them, then there is a 25-year limit.
If she's living with them, how much does she have?
Then she has. Then we said she has forever, because then we can assume that she never brought it up because she was embarrassed to bring it up.
And the Yoshin at some point in time that we gave her to the amount of her ksuba.
They would have to bring proof for that. No, I mean, okay. She has the ksuba. She has the ksuba in her hand. If they paid her off her ksuba, the ksuba should have been taken back. If they have proof, that's different.
Let's say they say we paid you in the amount of.
So we learned before that the question of whether Kosvin been shover or not. Is it that when her ksuba is paid off, it's expected that the Yoshin are going to write a receipt, and then they are going to have to hold on to the receipt? As proof that they paid it off, or is it that the ksuba itself is going to be taken? Well, it's 9:30 anyway. Or is it that the ksuba itself is going to be taken back and torn up?
But either way, she has to ask, and either she gets the receipt or the ksuba itself.
Yeah. So the Yerushim can unilaterally pay her, sure. But if they do, they're going to have some kind of proof. They're going to have to be able to bring some kind of proof for it. Either the proof is she doesn't have the ksuba in her hand, or the proof. Or the proof is that they wrote a shover, or they have aid in, as the case may be.